This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuckboy, Johnny G, standing 6'2", 299 pounds. He's on the swing up. Gotta turn this ship around. From the South Shore of Nassau County, Long Island, it's John Gabris. All you gotta do is trust me. Jackson, Maine, you're still here? You hurt my voice to do. Abortion is healthcare. Great. Topical. At least that part of your reference is topical. Also joining me in the High Mighty Studio is my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabris. Arthur, give him a shout out. Arthur cannot currently give a shout out because he is sitting outside the bathroom door while my wife showers, scratching at the door. He's got issues. Also joining me in the High Mighty Studios, first time guest, known this guy for a long ass time. Can't wait to tell you about the first show of his I saw. Yeah, from the Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Dig Man, it's Neil Campbell.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Hey, of course. Thanks for coming by.
I appreciate it.
I'll kick this conversation off because we're going to talk some UCB stuff. So in early, UCBLA, when would that have opened? In like the late aughts? Yeah, 2005. Yeah. So I started at UCB New York around like 03, 04. And one of the first like intros to UCBLA, to LA sketch comedy, was watching. I was in a sketch duo at the time, and Neil and Paul were doing UCB New York, and we were like, we should go see these guys. They're UCBLA, and it was so fucking funny. This is now almost 20 years ago. I do not remember any specifics except for Careless Whisper on a 2D saxophone.
Yes.
Or Baker Street. Saxophone song on a 2D sax.
Yeah, that was our show. Paul and I did a show called Growing Up is Tough. And that was, and we were like, basically, yeah, two adult man children who had run away from home to move to like the big city that was sort of a, you know, a kind of an imagining of what a big city would be like. And so they were like playing saxophone on fire escapes and stuff like that. Yeah.
That specific stood out to me and burned in my head forever. And it's funny when you see a show like that, recognize who you and Paul are, and then like have no real interaction with you guys. Like, so like, I don't really see you guys again till I move here, like, or like a DCM. Yeah. And in my head, they're like, those are the two young kids from the sketch comedy. And it's like, when I move out here, you're like the artistic director of the theater and stuff. I'm like, oh yeah, right. We've all grown up. It's been 10 years. I should be able to track. UCB has broken my brain in that when I met people is when I like, they're still in my head as that. Like,
yeah,
I'll be like, that guy's a fucking pain in the ass. I'm like, but I guess I'm judging him on his 20-year-old self, so maybe
I mean
now he's a father of two, he might be less of a pain in the ass.
Yeah I, you know, it's funny because I was the artistic director, and you know, people would not always be thrilled with choices that were made, and there were a couple like late night drunken emails I received you know, stuff
the
like
most
that.
Thankless job in the UCB community. You can only do, even when you are crushing it, you are still have to establish such intense boundaries.
Yeah.
Even if you're doing a good, I just remember Anthony King like just being like drunk with him at like a party and then being like, start talking to him about my Harold team. And I'm like, I am so sorry. Like, that is not what this is work for you. And now I'm like, can't believe you fucking cut me, man.
Yeah, I've had that conversation, you know, yes, somewhat druggedly.
But they're trying to...
More than once, this is saying that, yeah.
How frequently, because this is a vibe I've seen before, they're pretending like they are way too cool with it. Like, nah, come on, no, you had to fucking cut me, man. It's, look, I'm without a Harold team, I'm, you know, and it's like, clearly they are frustrated.
No, one person there was genuinely really upset, and I hadn't seen that person in a while. And the person probably had the right to be somewhat upset. It was, without saying anything, it was my first time being in charge of like Harold's, and one of the coaches said, like, oh, I'll just call this person and tell them they're cut. And then I was like, okay. And I think I called, if not everyone else, like most of the other, you know, however it worked. I memory's a little hazy, but then that person, I think at DCM, I want to say it was like a year and a half later, but maybe just the next summer, was upset with me and was upset that I had never called. And I was like, yeah, that's reasonable.
Yeah.
I kind of changed. I realized like, oh no, if I'm going to cut somebody, I should reach out and talk to them. And so I changed my policy thereafter. That was, I think, the only time I didn't do that.
How stressful of a gig like that. Like, yeah. you got to be sitting there like watching auditions being like, man, would waiting tables have been like a worse job to do while I was there?
Yeah, it was like, I mean, there were times I was like, well, I do feel well suited to it. So I at least feel like I'm doing a good job.
Well, you objectively did a good job. You know what I mean?
I mean, like, I do think it was a good era for the theater.
Yeah.
In terms of like the quality of shows and stuff and the popularity. But yeah, there were times I felt like I wanted to like make the majors or something. And then I accepted the job as like the equipment manager, right. You know? And so
you're like, I'll coach the minor league team. And they're like, okay, well, wait and see what the major leagues say, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there were just times where I was like, you know, I'm not really getting closer to like getting a writing job or whatever that is.
Because of the bronze handcuffs of
yeah.
UCB.
And there's just so much work and stuff, and even like people were getting hired at Funny or Die, and I was like, well, I do more like I'm pretty confident in my like sketch writing and performing abilities. Why aren't I on like the list at Funny or Die? And like, I who knows, there could be a million reasons of, and it's not that anyone who got hired there didn't deserve it, but I also like kind of think maybe they were like, well, he's the AD. We don't want to mess with UCB like that.
Right,
throw them into turmoil. It's like, no, please give me
You're like, I'll throw this all away for a Quibi show right now. Like,
exactly.
I'll be on the forefront.
Yeah.
I found it was really cool when the UCB LA, because I had known a bunch of New Yorkers that had moved. And the cool thing for me, I guess, was when I eventually moved here, I expected, oh, yeah, all my New York friends who moved to L.A. will be there. And then, you know, myopically, city-centrically, East Coast-centrically, forgot that, like, what about everyone who moved to L.A. first or started there? And I was like, oh, shit, all these fucking new people. And then, you know, like, I had met a few of you guys at DCM and, like, people who are memorable, like, Betsy Sidaro, there's person, like, and then you come to LA and then you're like, holy shit, like the competition, but also the friend pool has doubled in a way that is kind of exciting. And my favorite topic of conversation with mutual friend Mike Mitchell is how much the LA people hated us entitled New Yorkers when we showed up. Or some LA people, he's just comfortable, you know, saying all that shit.
I'm sure. Yeah.
And he's like, you walked in like you were cock of the walk. And I was like, yeah, sorry. Like, I was the 29 and thought I was.
Yeah, I was artistic director from 2008 to 2012. Like basically exactly like Obama getting elected to getting reelected was like when I was working there, like the autumns of those
when he
years.
Got reelected is when you were so angry that you quit being
yeah I stormed out of there yeah and it was funny. Like my mindset was like, I want this to be like the coolest comedy theater in town, and I want people to feel like if I buy a ticket to anything there, I can trust it's probably pretty good, that it's a well-vetted theater. And so I, you know, if people came in from New York and everyone was like, well, obviously, you know, Death by Roo Roo or whatever is a great group, you got to find a slot for them. Like, I was happy to do that, especially knowing that most of those groups also had or quickly built an LA fan base. In my mind, there was maybe a point where like I kept hearing like anyone who came from New York got so much hype, and then like there are a couple people I maybe saw and I was like, they may not be at like,
well, there are a bunch of yeah, there are a bunch of New York, just so you know, there was a bunch of New York text threads going around of like, look, this person just got like, is doing this. And it's like, they fucking sucked here. How are they succeeding there? And then it was like, oh, everyone will get found out eventually.
Yeah, yeah. So it was,
but you kind of monkey pawed yourself by really blossoming the theater in those years is when the exodus from New York started happening. People are like, there's a theater in LA. The only thing I'm doing here, everyone's been thinking about moving to LA for audition. Or you see like Rob Hubel moves to LA and then he's in a movie, and you just, right, your body equates those two things with like, well, I got to get to LA and then I'll be in movies.
Yeah.
Know?
And but it's funny, 'cause I do think like, if someone from LA were to be like, oh, we're not getting slots 'cause of the New York people, I would have, I mean, that's probably true to an extent, but I guess all I'm saying is like, let's say a show canceled, I wasn't like, well, let me just go ask like some like Herald guys to go do like a friend, you know, right, an improv show. I'd be like, well, let me see if like Sarah Silverman wants to do an hour. Let me see if like, it was mostly just trying to like book kind of exciting shows like that people would be like, whoa, that place is really cool, you know? Right, and right, so right. I think that maybe got in the way of, you know, prevented people from getting the stage time they thought they deserved more so than,
yeah,
like the shows that were just like solid, like Friday night shows that were, you know, yeah, the New York groups and stuff.
Right, right. And I feel like you made the theater this place and everyone's like, yo, there's actually like a really cool theater in LA. It's like, well, the only thing keeping me in New York is this fucking theater. So if I'm a big dog here, maybe I'll be a big dog there. And I didn't really show up with that attitude because I wanted to earn my place, but I knew other people who were like,
yeah,
it's crazy, I can't. And I'm like, what? I've said to a person specifically, I just leave all names out of this, I was like, I'm like a recognizable face in that I'm a giant like cartoon person. And when I came to UCBLA, I like stopped and introduced myself to everyone in the front, and they were like, ah, and I was like, yeah,
yeah,
you can't like, you have to keep manners afloat. Like,
yeah,
like, I don't think Maud credits transfer like that everyone thinks, or even, you know, Harold credits transfer like everyone thinks.
Yeah.
Gotta show up and be ready to earn it.
Yeah. I mean, when did you move to LA? I feel like the first time
I was 2012.
2012. That's what I was going to say. 'Cause I feel like I went to like your birthday or something at like the Surly Goat or something.
Yes,
like,
you did. Yeah.
Like, 'cause early
I live near there still.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy. Right. Yeah.
And I was like, one of the first times I'd actually kind of hung out with you was at your birthday.
Yeah. Right. Like one of our few first interactions was like, hey, I'm here at your birthday party. Good work.
Should I sing? Yeah.
I want to say, while you are the person who recommended me to Scott Aukerman to be a guest on Comedy Bang Bang, and that kind of launched a whole era of my career. So I got
to give you thanks for that. Of course. I mean, yeah, Scott used to ask me for recs a lot. I mean, when I was AD and stuff, because I still was AD when like the first season of the Bang Bang TV show wrote. It wasn't like a room that lasted a long, long time.
Right,
and so
right.
I stayed as AD until the second season got picked up. And I was like, all right,
you were working on the first season.
Yeah, yeah.
You got called up to the IFC majors, which is kind of like Japanese, yeah, Super League.
Exactly. And but I still stayed, you know, on the AAA team too. But yeah, it's because people would ask me also, like, how did you get involved at UCBLA? Like, what should I do? I was like, it was Paula Rust and I and other friends got in at like the ground floor the month the theater opened. Well, Scott and Kulop had recommended us to like Besser. And then the month the theater opened, Paul and I went to the first, it was called Not Too Shabby, like the open mic for sketch comedy.
Yeah. Besser, we had that in New York called Liquid Courage.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And Besser was hosting it when we did a sketch at the first show. It was just like, yeah, Fridays at midnight or at 11, something, whatever that was. Then we went back the next week to do it again. And Besser was there and he came out front and he saw us and he recognized we had been there the previous week as well. And we also were on the calendar to do a show. Like, they were testing out like a bunch of, duos and sketch groups and stuff when the first few months the theater was open. So
because you guys were doing, you and Paul were doing shit together before the theater.
Yeah, Paul and I went to college together at University of Iowa, and then we were doing stuff and with our friend Michael Cassidy, who also went to Iowa with us, and another friend named Chris Stengel, and the four of us did stuff together, and then Paul and I also did two man stuff together, and solo bits and stuff too, but. So we go the second week to Not Too Shabby. We're in line. Besser comes out and he's like, I can't host a Friday at Midnight show every week. Do you guys just want to host this? And so just because we showed up 2 weeks in a row and we hosted that show for like 5.5 years.
I know.
Like we hosted to like 2010. So
I got to give you guys credit for doing it for that long. Got to give Besser credit for doing it at all in the first place. But of course, Besser is like a hawk for people who work hard in our town, you know, like,
yeah,
you Neil and Paul guys, you guys should be working more, you know?
Yeah. So that was, we loved it. So then we were, I mean, that really like kind of helped shape our sensibility and stuff too. Cause we would bring sketches every week. And then, we were like at a certain point, like, well, we don't have time to like write and rehearse a sketch every week. It was like, well, what if we just sort of have an idea for one? So it's sort of like beat out a little, but then we'll improvise it. And then that's kind of like still what we do. Cause we do this show, Playhouse Masterpieces.
Right,
still.
That's
kind of a similar approach. So.
When after Besser saw mine and Justin Tyler, my writing partner's sketch show, he was like, the show is hilarious, but you guys need to change your name, the name Tibris.
I was going to say Tibris, but yeah.
And I said to him, I'm like, well, like, I mean, Upright Citizens Brigade is like a fucking dumb name too, but like you guys built a rep, and I watched his face kind of like fall, and I was like, oh, I thought that was like a given. That you don't think that name is crazy? Like it's only not crazy anymore. That was the thing I would always talk about with, like, when people are like, I don't know what to name our team. Every name sounds stupid. I'm like, Respecto Montalban, Monkey Dick, those are some of the worst names ever, and these are New York teams. But because they ended up being so fucking awesome, you were just like, Respecto. And they were like, cool. And like, these names all of a sudden didn't seem corny anymore. You know what I mean?
I remember Besser, this is basically that you say that to him. So like, also in the early days of UCBLA, it was like the curriculum wasn't fully set yet. Like Aukerman was my first sketch writing teacher, and he was just teaching sketch how he wanted to teach sketch. Right. Like, I don't think we said the word game once, you know? And then, you know, and maybe then I took like, I think then I took a class with Besser, and it was a sketch writing class. And I remember he said something in the class that was like, you know, the best sketch should also theoretically be able to be an improv scene. And I like that really like bumped to me. He's like, any sketch that you see, you should have been able to do also as an improv scene. And I think he was maybe saying it, you know, in defense of improv, or
right, like you should be able to, you can, with improv, you can reach the heights of the best sketch.
Yes, that's yes,
like what he was,
but he kind of meant it both ways. And I like, I had this like job where I was logging reality TV footage, and I like was like, hey, can I talk to you? And he talked to me on the phone for like 40 minutes, and I was like, I just feel like any medium, the best example of that medium is something that could only work in that medium. So like the best novel is something that is unadaptable to a movie, and the best, like, how is that? I have this whole like
day one of your class. This is awesome. And Besser is the guy who, I mean, he is standoffish, he is all these things, but he will talk to you on the phone for 40 minutes about comedy theory.
Yeah, it was like during my lunch break, I'm like going like, so I don't agree that the best sketch should be something you could have never improvised. It should be something like, I was like, I can't believe he did that he like talked to me that long. That's so kind of, can't believe I was like, lunch break time, not gonna eat today, I'm gonna walk around the parking lot.
Oh god. Well, let's talk a little bit about your early days at UCB, because I kind of have similar story to you. Is like, I joke that when I auditioned for Harold Teams in 2004, it was like the last year that sort of just like funny weirdos got put on Teams. After that, it was kind of like people who knew what game and heightening and second beats were. I was like the last generation of just. Not that I don't understand game. I think I would have succeeded. However, but the last time, because some people are always like, man, how did you get in? And I was like, honestly, they put like 16 people on teams this like 1 year. And it just worked out that I happened to have been done with at the time 3A. Like, you know, like I wasn't even that deep into the curriculum. I had like three classes or four classes under my belt. And it was just like, you talking about call, like talking about comedy for an hour on your lunch break from your shitty job is so goddamn, not that logging tapes is what I was doing too, but it was a shitty.
No, it's 100% a shitty job.
I was a PA on VH1 shows, and all I would do is like look at the Improv Resource Center, like talk to people about IM with people about shows we saw about, and I would eventually grow out, like get to the point where I was doing multiple shows myself a week. And then on days I wasn't, I was coaching other teams. And mm-hmm. then during the day, me and my writing partner were together. Like everything I was doing was like about comedy and in no specific path. In yeah. like no real, like in sort of like that improv, like lackadaisical feeling of just like, all I cared about was comedy. I could talk about it. You would just go out to the bars and drink with the same people that you just rehearsed and did a show. Yeah. Like, there was a point where like Mailer Demon was running in Cage Match, rehearsing on we had rehearsal Sunday nights. We were the anchor team, so we had Harold every Tuesday. We were running in Cage Match on Thursday, and then we had an every other Friday slot at Under St. Mark's. So I was with this team of people like 16 to 25 hours a week, not including like drinking after all of those things.
Yeah, I mean, I have friends, you know, I was doing last day of school, started as a Herald team, then was a weekly team every Thursday night. And then I also was in the sketch group A Kiss From Daddy, and we would meet weekly for a rehearsal and then had a monthly show. And that was just such baked in hangout time, both like the rehearsals themselves or shows, but also then we'd go to Birds or whatever afterwards. And it was like, once I stopped doing those teams, it became a challenge to see friends. Cause I was like, we never had to think about it. We just knew like, yep, Birds after the show or whatever. We right. had these times, and it was like, oh, we have to now make an effort to see each other and like maintain a friendship. It was, and some of them fell by the wayside. Like,
well, yeah, that's when that's also when you realize where you're like, oh, so-and-so moved like six months yeah. after. You're like, oh, right. Yeah. We just weren't riding the train weekly yeah. or going to hit Birds together every week.
Yeah. So my early UCB, well, okay. I lived in New York actually the year 2002, and I Holy had graduated shit. College like a little bit early, and I was like 21 and I moved there, and there were some guys who had gone to Iowa who were a little bit older than me. And I, moved in with one of them or a couple of them and knew some other folks. And in my mind, I was like, all right, we're going to be this collective. And it was like, no, everyone had their own lives. I didn't like show up. And then suddenly we were like this new, whatever, sketch group or theater company or whatever I thought we were going to potentially be. And so that whole year I lived in New York, and I just like PA'd on films and stuff and was like getting up at 4 a.m. every morning, and you know, we're gonna like meet in Manhattan.
Where'd you live?
Fifth Avenue and 19th Street in Brooklyn.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And
in 02, that's like, that's, you know, pioneer time. That's cool.
This bar yeah. opened up called Buttermilk that was like a few blocks away, like Fifth and Prospect or something. Yeah. And it was like, oh, this is like the white hipster like outpost this in this right. area. Like, but the whole time I was there, I went to UCB once because another guy who had gone to college with me was Jake Johnson, and he oh, yeah. was doing a spank show with this guy, Oliver Raleigh, who I didn't know. And they were paired with Cowboy and John, their oh, spank show.
That's Curtis Gwynn and Gemberling. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I saw that spank show at the old space in 02, but then never there are times I go, like, if I had realized sort of what UCB was and that is what I was looking for, like a community of people doing like funny and weird stuff, I wonder if I would have stayed in New York. But instead, some of my friends then began to graduate, and it was like, we're gonna go to LA. And I was like, sure, I'll go too. So I was only in New York 1 year. So then was in LA before UCB opened, and Paul and I were doing just, you know, and Mike and other friends as well were doing as much as we could around. And we were so dying for, if not like a UCB, like we'd all read that Mr. Show book, and it was like, there used to be the Diamond Club, and Bob would do a half hour show, then Andy Dick would do a half hour show.
Right.
You know, we were like dying for a place like that. And then when UCB opened, and then Kulop and Ackerman knew that about us, and they recommended us to Bester. So we just like got to intern there and take classes for free, like right away. We had such like a privileged entry point. And like I said, we were hosting the weekly show. You were
conscripted more or less. Like they were like, we're opening a outpost here. It's like, who's here? It's like, well, there's these like 14 people that we know from New York, like Seth Morris and Husky and these people here. It's like, well, what about LA people? It's like, ask around to other comedy heads. And it's like
that first month of shows, we still talk about it sometimes. It was like this crazy, like he basically just tried everyone out. Everyone got way too ambitious, and everyone's show was supposed to be a half hour and wound up being like 54 minutes long and had like video runners and costumes, and everything was like so complex. And we were going to see each other's like, oh, is this one going to be really good? Are we going to get, and I think at the end of all of that, like Josh Fadum, Charlene Yee, and Paul and I'm sure others I'm forgetting, kind of emerged from the morass there and got like runs of shows. But
that's a good foursome to help describe Besser's taste.
Yes, yeah.
Like you and Paul doing your version of solid, well-written two-person sketch comedy, but also Charlene and Josh being sort of like these wild card freaks are like
exactly
so in Besser's wheelhouse as well.
Yeah. And so, yeah, then we were in like, we take an Improv 101 with Danielle Schneider and Improv 201 with Donna Fineglass.
Hell yeah.
And it was like during 201 when the auditions, the first time there were auditions for Harold Teams, they had like pre-formed a few, I think out of like a Walsh class maybe. And one was just the faculty. And then they're like, okay, we're going to have auditions for Harold Teams. But again, this wasn't like you needed to have completed 401.
Right.
It was just, we're going to ask teachers for recs. And like Donna recommended Paul and I, and we auditioned. And I think we kind of were like cocky. Like we were thinking like, well, I guess we'll probably get on this team, right? What's a Harold exactly? Yeah. And we did. We got on the team. And that was like January 06. And that was last day of school. And I mean, I don't know that we're like officially done now, but we still had a couple shows this year. But
that's,
I do
crazy.
Think we are kind of, you know, I don't know the last time we got the whole gang together. So I think we're kind of off the calendar, and or you know, we've sort of removed ourselves since I don't think any we were really able to show up as a team. But
that's so awesome. I love the idea of you seeing a show, a UCB show in New York, and maybe wondering if you missed something, and then finding it even better with like some Iowa heads and like landing at one at the beginning of it too. Like there, that's like such a, like a serendipitous thing to like, right near it. And then we're like, oh shit, was that actually kind of cool? And then found it again, like on.
Well, and also like, I, you know, all the controversy about paying performers or whatever, like we used to be renting theater spaces. So we were like, you know, basically
not having to do
money.
That was enough.
I was like, you have a tech person? I'm not paying this person. Like, it was like, this is such a dream deal. Like, I was so stoked about it.
I want to talk about my accidental discovery of UCB real quick. I was in a short form and sketch group in college and like making videos and shit, just classic, like 20 something, you know, late teens nerd stuff. And I'm from Long Island, just outside of New York City. Mm-hmm. Went in to go to a Knicks game with a couple of friends. And we were just like, let's go in like 5 hours early and like wander around the city. Someone's like, there's a vintage store downtown that I love. It's just like something a girl said. And we were like, yeah, we got to go to something called Cheap Jack's. Once I moved to the city and I realized like a huge vintage store in downtown is just like an expensive tourist trap. Didn't know that at the time. So we get a little lost trying to walk back to Madison Square Garden, and we walk past just down the street, and the 3D glasses are spray painted on a pulled down gate, and it says Upright Citizens Brigade. And I go, oh shit, that's like that TV show. I had the box because I loved sketch comedy so much, and I watched the DVDs. And I also, this would have been my junior or senior year. Once I was a beach lifeguard, I was making such good money in the summer for a 17-year-old with no bills that I was going immediately to Blockbuster and buying DVDs from the used bin. And just, I had like, so in storage, I have like all of Monty Python's Flying Circus. Like I have like every sketch comedy show that was I liked when I was 20 on DVD somewhere. And I'm like, oh shit, that's so cool. Oh, weird. Theater. I didn't know they had a theater. That's so, and then like back at school this, like that next semester, I, you know, meta-crawlered. I don't think Google existed yet. I like meta-crawlered Upright Citizens Brigade. And then it was like classes. And I was like, whoa, they teach. And I'm into improv. I only know what long form improv is from reading Impro, the Keith Johnstone book. But I don't know. I didn't pick up. I didn't understand anything I was reading there.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, what is? And then you click on it. And the class descriptions were like bits back then. And it was like close quarter jungle combat, like all this stuff that was like,
that's funny, you'll learn improv.
And I was like, that's pretty fucking rad. I know it's a joke, but that's pretty. So I signed up to take level one after the summer in between my junior and senior year. And I handed someone in hindsight, I'm now a friend. I handed Chad Carter like $300 cash that I went to the ATM and I took these class. And if I didn't see that, maybe I would have heard about it eventually because I did college improv, but I cannot believe. And I was just like, it blew my parents' mind and even my own that like the summer in between junior and senior year of college, when I was just like an alcoholic party animal, I was like, I think one day a week I'd like to commute into the city from the beach and go take an improv class. My parents were like, what the fuck? And then my senior year, I went back with like level one in my system. And I was like, short form is whack. We should just be doing scenes.
God. That's good.
And I was just like, so, and then I was like, forget, I'm graduating college. I'm getting some dumb job in New York City and I'm taking classes at UCB. This is the truth. This is the reality. And I didn't even have like a good teacher or even a good experience in my level one class, but I was enjoying short form improv so much. And then just doing it without the built in sitting, standing, kneeling and shit. I was just like, this is the truth. This is, you know, it's like taking the condom off or something. You're like, what the fuck? I was wearing this thing for 3 years.
Yeah.
This rules.
Yeah, I remember, like, well, so we had been doing, like I said, sketch, and that's where Paul Russ and I met, and in this show at University of Iowa called No Shame, that was like also sort of like an open mic for sketch comedy, but it was really an open mic for anything. Like you could bring your acoustic guitar and play a song, whatever. But it was in a theater, and it was largely people doing solo characters and sketches and stuff, and so. That had been my background, doing a lot of that, doing sketch. Moved out to LA, like the four of us were doing like sketch shows here and there. Paul and I were doing things, but then also would go to open mics and do bits. But they were all like warmed over, like I never did I wouldn't say I ever had like a good stand-up set. Like I probably sometimes tried to tell jokes, but it was more like doing like
presentational bits, kind of.
Yeah, like something like Eugene Merman would do or something, right. You know. And in my mind. And so was, you know, improv was then the last thing. I never did short form. It was like, well, as long as I'm at UCB, I'm interning and getting to take classes for free. Yeah, I guess I'll take improv. And was my like last point in. But I will say when I started taking the sketch writing classes, even though I had been doing sketch at that point for, you know, counting college, like 5 years, it was the first time I like went like, oh, here's like a system. And I wrote the worst sketches in like Besser's class. I felt so like ashamed and terrible about them. But it just was a thing where I did it enough times. And I was like, oh, now I understand what a sketch is supposed to be. And if it's failing, you know, maybe why, as opposed to like a sketch to me was like a bunch of weird shit could happen for 4 minutes. And sometimes there was like a spine kind of connecting everything. And sometimes there was not. And
I suffered from the same thing of like, I'm awesome at specifics. It's like, and it's just like the shit I was writing was just like absurdist bullshit that it was like, you know, like if I got Besser notes on it, it would be like people don't talk like this. This isn't like, it was so unreal. Everything was like, just like heightened, stupid. Like, yeah. Here's one I did in college, the mangina monologues. I think you could kind of sort out what that might look like.
Paul and I still talk about, we were in, I guess at this point, Improv 401, and Seth Morris was the teacher. And he said, he was like, oh, it was good. But, you know, when you're hungry, when your character is hungry, they don't need to like rub their bellies in a big circle and like lick their lips like a cartoon character. You could just play it real. We're like, yeah, good point. And I don't think Paul was well intentioned. I don't think it ever totally sank in.
I'm laughing at the idea of getting that note, and also I'm picturing Paul rubbing his belly.
There's probably like one scene Paul did the next week, like struggling to not lick his lips and rub his belly, and then was like, fuck it, I have to do that.
That's really funny. Seth Morris was my level two teacher in New York. He took over for Paul Scheer, who is my... At one point, I was taking level two and working at Best Week Ever as a PA, where Paul was a talking head. And Entertainment Weekly came to do a story about Paul. This is 2004, 2005. Paul Scheer had an article written about him about how he was like the hardest working guy in comedy. This is 20 years later. I think he still might be.
That's really funny.
Like, he just was he just does everything. He's just like a guy who's got his hand in everything in a cool way, and yeah, he's trying all this different shit. And so I remember, later on, he only taught a few of the classes. A couple of Seth took over for him. A few months later, 6 months later, I get put on a Herald team, and I get the call at my work phone from Anthony King. And he's like, I'm going to put you on a Harold team. I'm like, oh, that's... Paul Scheer is in there getting interviewed that day, like at Best Week Ever. And I'm supposed to like bring in some sort of prop or something into the studio. I come in and I'm like, Scheer, I got put on a Harold team, man. And I could see he's like, I'm not positive who this guy like. And I'm like, oh, we had three-hour classes. And like, you kind of seen me in the office. I'm having all this where I'm like, can't wait to tell my teacher. I mean, now Paul and I are buds, but at this moment I'm going like, buddy, I'm doing it. I'm following in your footsteps. And he's like, that's great, man. Okay. Like, back to talking about The Bachelor or whatever. It's like, yeah, all right. Yeah. That's, what am I doing?
I've never like booked that much stuff off of auditions, like acting stuff. And I wouldn't say it, certainly at this point, it's not my main pursuit, but in general, I never did that well.
It is my main pursuit, and I also did not do it.
Well, I disagree with that. But I remember having one audition once and being like, I think that's the best audition I've ever done. Like, I felt really good, and I never felt good after an audition.
That's a crazy feeling, yeah.
It was for the pilot of The League, and I was like, whatever, you know, it was like improv, and I was like improvising something about like, you know, I'm being like kind of talked into a trade I don't want to make. And I was playing fantasy football at the time, so I knew like specifics I could use, and was playing like a sad side. I was like, damn, I did really well. And then Scheer, it was the part Scheer played. And I was like, well, what could you do? Yeah, he's better. That's
he's very good. Yeah, you lost out to all the master comedy improvisers, Nick Kroll, Paul Scheer, Mark Duplass, like all the
Yeah, it was, but it was like specifically his part. And I was like, it's like that story about like Chris Farley, like after girl's broken up with him, and he's like, whoever she's with, maybe better looking, maybe this, but he's not funny. Or he's telling this to David Spade, and David Spade knows that she's dating Steve Martin now. And it's like, well, it's like,
well, it's a matter of taste, but
yeah. But it's like, yeah, that's how I felt. I was like, damn, I couldn't have done any better. How could they not call me back? Oh yeah, I see. The guy who is the best at it is up for this.
Well, that's what's really, and the UCB kind of was my first step in this direction of like, I was the funniest kid at my college. I didn't go to a big college. I was the funniest kid in my level one class. And I was like, damn, I was the funniest one out of my friends. I was the funniest one lifeguard. Like, I was just like, I'm king of fucking shit mountain. I'm unstoppable. And then like, I show up to UCB and I'm like, oh, there's like 400 people who are the funniest in their small rooms. And now we're all in one large room. I have this distinct memory of walking backstage for my first Harold night into the UCB green room. I had only been in there on like a Sunday at noon for like a graduation show. And Harold night, for listeners who don't know, is like the sort of like not big night. It's not like it's popular amongst students because it's free at the time. Four different teams of eight improvisers are going to do a show that night. And you get put on these teams and you have a couple of Tuesdays a month that you're doing it, or all four Tuesdays, whatever it might be. So there are a few teams hanging out back there, and I'm walking back there and I'm like, I'm just going to be with my fucking people. I'm going to be with my fuck. And I walk backstage and I'm like, holy shit. These are like, and I'm like being myself and I'm like, oh shit, these are not exactly my people. I had such a myopic view. I'm like, everyone's going to be like me, Chris. And then some of the funniest people in the world have an insanely different demeanor than yes. I do. And I was like, yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. There's like, I just like walk back and it's just like, two guys are like, you know, and I was like, oh, right. This is going to be fucking very different. And I just, every step of the way for me was like eye opening where I was like, and then once I fucking, God help me, once I like branched out from seeing improv as like, and I was like, oh, okay, now there are people who are doing things that I like, I can't do that even. Fuck, man. And I've just been humbled every step of the way. And the fact that I'm still a little cocky is wild.
I forget if this was 101 or 2-1, improv 101 or 2-1, but June Raphael was in the class and Paul came to our class show. And I remember I had some like group game initiation and I can't remember it, but in my mind I was like, damn, that was really like a good premise initiation. It was kind of like a clever in my mind at the time, like mind fucky kind of like, you know, I love like those Mr. Show sketches that kind of, you know, where the snake's eating its own tail kind of a thing. And
right. It was just it's something like this will self-destruct in a fun way.
Exactly. Yeah. And I remember Sheer came up to me after the show, was like, oh, that's really funny. Scene or initiation or something, and I was like really like, oh thanks, that's awesome. But it kind of fucked me up, not just him saying that, but in general I was like, that's what I always want to do, is have an initiation that is basically I'm laying out the newest classic Mr. Show sketch on a platter. Like, I had to like hit a point where I was like, you know what? What's fun about improv is not know what's going to happen. And I can be fine just initiating a scene, say like, yeah, it looks like it's going to rain or whatever. And seeing where it builds up and goes to, and like having to let go of that, like needing to lay out a like a comedy premise that no one's ever seen before. Like really held me back for a minute.
And it's funny, like once you've now been doing it for so long and with the same group of people, like you just come out and you're like, oh weird, what's that on the floor? you're like sorry, I was looking at the floor, I didn't have anything, I just said that. Now we're a stellar scene you build to,
kind of more
scene.
Fun that way, you know. Yeah,
right.
Did you know that your temperature at night can have one of the greatest impacts on your sleep quality? If you wake up too hot or too cold, I highly recommend you check out Miracle Made's bed sheets. Inspired by NASA, Miracle Made uses silver-infused fabrics and makes temperature-regulating bedding so you could sleep at the perfect temperature all night long. Dude, I don't know much about the science behind temperature at night, but your big boy here likes it cool. So I love the Miracle Made self-cooling properties for better quality sleep. They have silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA, dude. And they are thermoregulating, designed to keep you the perfect temperature all night. They are self-cleaning. These sheets are infused with silver that prevent up to 99% bacterial growth, staying cleaner and fresher 3 times longer than other sheets. Don't take that as too much of an excuse, fam, okay? Don't become full, you know, gremlins with it, but man, you can keep these on for longer than you think. Miracle Sheets are the perfect gift for your spouse, friends, or family who doesn't want better sleep and luxurious feeling bed sheets. And since these come with 3 free towels, get 2 gifts in one, just in time for the holidays. Dominate Secret Santa. Go to trymiracle.com/mighty. Trymiracle.com/mighty to try it today or gift it to someone special this holiday season. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Save over 40%. And if you use our promo code MIGHTY at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/mighty and use the code mighty to claim your three-piece towel set and save over 40%. Again, that's trymiracle.com/mighty to treat yourself, a friend, or a loved one this holiday season. This episode is sponsored by NordVPN. NordVPN offers many tools to improve your online experience, and it's easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. NordVPN has 5,900-plus servers in 60 countries. Find a server near you for better speed or connect to a faraway location to freely explore the internet. Plus, they have amazing speed. It's confirmed by multiple tests. NordVPN is the fastest VPN out there. Don't miss your favorite content from home when traveling abroad. With NordVPN, you can access your favorite shows anywhere in the world. It takes just a click. Open the map, click on a location, and you'll be connected in seconds. It's that easy. Using a VPN can help you find services at a lower price. Want to use a platform that isn't available in your country? Simply change your virtual location. Plus, no more bandwidth throttling based on traffic type. Since NordVPN encrypts all traffic, your internet service provider, your ISP, I'm cool knowing stuff like that, can't slow down your streaming speed. So get connected today at nordvpn.com/mighty. That's nordvpn.com/mighty. nordvpn.com/mighty. Get on the internet. In my level one class show, a grown, you know, I was a 21-year-old with like frosted tips and wearing flip flops and board shorts. A grown woman, like in hindsight, when I told the story when I was 21, I said she was 40. She was probably in her 30s. Mm-hmm. She slapped me in the face in the scene, like super fucking hard. She just had like one of those panic moves where you're like, this'll get a laugh. And it was so hard. And it was, 15 people in the crowd. And you heard like a couple of people go like, oh. And I was like, wow. And I was like, this is fucking crazy. This theater is nuts. And in my head, I was like, this is something that can happen. Like, and I just was like ready for shit like that.
This was not as like deliberate. But when I was on Harold Knight last day of school, I was walking. Someone said over the line, maybe it was me, maybe it was someone else, that got the blackout at the end of the Herald, and I kept walking, and I assumed Paul was also going to keep walking, whatever trajectory we were both on, but he stopped in the blackout, and I went full bore, my nose into his forehead. My nose is still crooked, like you can see, and I came up, and I was dazed. I don't know if I started bleeding from my nose on stage, but if not, it was the second I got backstage, and I like went into the green room, and people were like, whoa, Neil, are you all right? I was like, one sec, and I went to like... the rear dressing room and literally did like a with my nose, try to push it a little back into place, and then like went to the emergency room, and like John Bowie was our coach and he felt bad and came out to like the hospital to see me and stuff. Like,
what a good soul.
Yeah, it was really nice. But
that's so awesome.
Yeah. It was like my first like 2 months of doing a Herald and my nose is forever impacted by it. Yeah.
Random level one story. Shannon O'Neill would later on was hanging out. I got this text from her. She was the AD for a while in New York. She was hanging out with Vanessa Beyer, found out that Vanessa Beyer took level one and at UCB. And she's like, when was that? She's like, in the early 2000s or whatever. And Spo was like, do you remember anybody from your class? And Vanessa was like, there was like one big, loud, tan guy, and he was like, oh, and Spo just goes, I bet you that was John Gabers. Hold on, let's look him up in the computer. And it was. I was in level one with Vanessa Beyer, and we're now friends, but we had no idea that either of us existed. Like, I was like, being tan and coming from like an outdoors job blew the mind of like anyone who was involved with UCB at the time. It's like, well, we're all indoor freaks. I remember one class, we were in the classroom on 23rd Street, and it was a Delaney class, and there was like, one of those like Japanese paper dressing walls that like divided like half of it, and Besser just comes out of that half of the room, like by himself, like, and we were like, holy shit, that's Matt Besser. That was Matt Besser. And after class, I was like, I got to see what's over there. And I kind of like creeped over to look what was over there, and it was just a bed. And I was like, oh God, this place is fucking crazy.
I
know I've performed at both. You don't really know New York that well, but do you hear of any differences when people, cause I don't have much of a comparison. Like New York felt smaller to me, but I think that's just because I was there first. LA felt like there was just LA, and maybe it was 2012 versus 2004. LA was more diverse. LA had more diverse in the way that corporations talk about diversity, but also in the output of styles of comedy. Like, New York like was kind of into like would have Whiplash, but we didn't have like a comedy death ray. We didn't have a lot of all that stuff was. We had very few like non-homegrown UCB people doing shows. Like Crash Test was like, even Crash Test was Rob and Paul anyway.
Yeah.
But like there was, when I came to LA, I was like, oh, this is cool that this person has a show here. This person does like, there's like a stand-up variety. Like that shit wasn't really happening at UCB. So I thought that to me was so cool because I was like, there was like less improv on the calendar in a way that.
Yeah. I mean, that was like when I was AD, like that was part of, I think the reason I was hired was because like, well, I knew like, cause Aukerman had Comedy Death Ray, then Comedy Bang Bang was the Tuesday night, like stand up showcase show every Tuesday at UCB.
And that ran forever.
That ran forever. And, and then, yeah, there was like, well, Rob Delaney had a monthly show and the Garfunkel and Oates had a monthly, you know.
Right.
Or event didn't always, but while I was AD at some point began to. And so I think that, and you know, I was buddies with stand-ups, though not good at it myself. And I knew that world, you know, I knew the world inside and out, but compared to some people around the theater who were like improv people who were just like, you could say the name of a stand-up and they would have no
idea. You're like, I don't watch stand-up. You're like,
yeah,
really?
So I was, at least I had like a familiarity with that and the world of sketch, which is more what I came from and all that. So, yeah, that always was like trying to find the balance and having like, well, we have these improv nights Monday and Friday and da-da-da. But yeah, in terms of New York, I mean, I would only ever go out around DCM. So I never really knew it. I think the thing in my mind, and I don't know how true this is, but the thing that I always felt like we fell short of was like, we would occasionally do, there would be like a movie form group and I was in it. And there was a class that was the movie form class and then a team sort of formed out of it. And we did some shows and there were funny people on it, but it always felt like we were struggling with the form itself. Like we were we're all funny, but we're trying
to
make
it. The form is like in the way of you guys.
Yes. And you would just hear about like the New York movie form team. And I never saw one of their shows, but in my mind, it was just like, they just kind of all nodded at each other and knew like, yep, this one's a political thriller. And we all know the tropes of every political thriller and just like knew how to go. Okay. We pull out and it's revealed he has been shot in the back of the head or whatever, you know, and in my mind, they like were just such like a collective mind that I felt like whenever there were those like, or like our team tried to do like the LaRonde or whatever. And we were just always struggling. Like, and now it's back where it began. Like, and it was, you know, and if it was just like doing funny scenes, which is eventually what we did, we get text messages and just do scenes. Then I was like, all right, good. We're being funny. This is our strength. But I always felt like, God, there was like some discipline and some people that really fucking knew this shit in New York.
Well, New York had that thing too, where it had like the people, the power players who were around forever. Like the people who were doing the movie form were also the people who were rocking it on the Friday night show and teaching level two and doing a sketch show. You know, like you could just see so much wild shit. Like when I came up, it would be like, You watch Husky Manzoukas and Seth Morris absolutely annihilate just their improv show. Then you see Seth Morris, Curtis Quinn, and some other variation of the 30 best people at the theater do this form. Then you see Seth Morris and Brian Husky do Trev and the Revs sketch comedy. Then you see, and it felt like a little bit, because it was smaller than newer.
Yeah.
It was a little bit felt like the Players. There were like, you know, the UCB Players. And you're like, I just want to be one. And I was eventually one, you know, where mine and Justin's sketch show was running weekly. I was on Harold Knight. I was running Cage Match. I was sitting in on other shows. I was doing hosting the Jam. And like the theater was small enough that I got to do all that. Now, I don't know if this is 20s versus 30s, but my big thing was New York bit shows used to go fucking hard. It used to be like a bit show was pretty much a party backstage that you had to take like an 8-minute break from to go do something on stage. And I don't know, like, I know also bit shows are just annoying, like, to try to sell tickets to or whatever, but back in the day, that felt like, when I came to LA, I was like, I'll get to know everyone doing bit shows, you know? And that just like wasn't as much of a thing. As a matter of fact, the bit shows I did when I moved to LA were being hosted by other New Yorkers. And maybe that just wasn't part of what LA was built on, because you guys kind of had a whole comedy scene to just be like, let's build a theater around it or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I don't ever remember the bit shows ever being too much of like a place where people came together to sort of compare, you know, or see what each other did, or being a social center either.
Right.
But
it was more about like everyone would just be backstage and like insane. It was like a fucking movie. You would be like backstage in insane wardrobe costumes, gags or whatever, and getting fucking blasted. And on stage would be the demon Halloweenist that we all had to go out and impress so that the world wouldn't get sucked into hell or whatever. And they were all just like random fucking setups to just and like, you know, we had some local character. Here's something UCB New York had that UCB LA maybe had in its early times. UCB New York came from such scratch that there was like probably a dozen legitimate freaks that weren't even like doing comedy, which sometimes do stuff, seem to maybe work at the theater for free in some weird way. Like
I kind of know at least a couple of the people you're talking about.
I saw some of them are still around in various capacities, but there were like 10 to 12 people, mostly dudes, I think probably all dudes, that were just like, hey, like eventually you'd be doing comedy for like a year and a half and you'd be like, what? Do I have to like respect this person? Like and someone would be like, no, this guy's a fucking psycho. They're just like, no one knows how to say, get out of here at this point. It's like, there are just people who are like vestiges of like old, like, and you know, there was a little bit of early on fostering that kind of like punk collective vibe that, but when I came to LA, I was like super impressed about how whoever you interacted with at the theater was there for a reason and not just like, I'm here every night. You know, like, really?
I mean, when I was AD, this may kind of like tell a story of how it changed in a way from at least 08 to 12. When Herald teams like would first get formed in 08, I remember, but not even necessarily Herald teams, when there'd be like a new talent around the theater, a performer that people was just sort of coming to people's attention. I remember being like, if you want to get and I was hearing this from agents. It was like, someone needs like a one person show to like get a representation.
Right.
So if
right.
you see people like, I remember like, I thought Stephanie Allen was really funny and I worked with her and directed her like one person show. And I worked with a lot of people on like either a one person show or like a two or three person like sketch group show or whatever. And by like 2011, I'd get emails from reps like, hey, will you include me on the list when you announce the new Herald teams? Like, they wanted to know the names of the new Herald team members right away, in a way where they used to be like, I'm not going to just sign someone off of an improv show. I got to see how their brain works. What's right, their one-person show? Can they get an SNL audition? And it went so quickly, too. Like, or maybe not quickly, but by the end, they reps were just like, I'm going to try to meet with the new hot shit at UCB. I don't need to wait for them to have a show.
That's so funny. Yeah, UCB New York in the early aughts, mid-aughts, had like the classic pattern of like, at first it was like, everyone who makes Harold Knight like takes a Brooke and Mary commercial class because Brooke and Mary love UCB and they'll help you get a commercial agent. Then you get a commercial agent. Then everyone's like, you should have a one-man show. You should do sketch. You got to get Jane Borden from Time Out New York to come to your show. If you get a review in Time Out New York, you'll sell out weekly. And so it was like always busking, always hustling for. And then it was like, you got to get a sketch show. You got to get into Aspen. You got to get it. Then it was like, fucking like Doug Mand, Dan Greger, and Adam Pally, they like made a pilot presentation themselves, and it got like that became the thing that everyone started doing at the theater. Everyone started being like, "We're not writing sketch anymore. We got to write a full script and then shoot like an 8-minute version of it with like a high end camera." Yeah. And then everyone tried that, and only a handful. Then Derek Comedy kind of dropped in with doing like sketch videos, and they were like the first. Sketch videos were popular, but they were like the first UCB people who started doing sketch videos, and their director Dan Ekman like elevated them in a way that they were more cinematic than a lot of stuff at the time. And then every single person started making video sketches, and it's like, we just like anything that worked, people would just be like, "Yes, that's the answer." Like, there was like a swath of one person shows after like someone's one person show who I can't remember. They weren't even like a hardcore UCB person. They were, it might've been like Eliza Coop. Like there was someone who wasn't like a full blown homegrown person, but they did a one person show and it like did gangbusters for their career. And everyone's like, it's one. It's like, honestly, I remember hearing someone who's going to sign 8 guys to a sketch show, you know, like birthday boys have said this, some version of this forever, but it's like, you're like, right, we got to get, it's about, and then all of a sudden it's like, not about improv anymore. You're like, I just do Harold Knight. It's good to hang out. I love it. I enjoy it. I want to be good. But the future, my future is in this one man show I'm working on.
Yes.
Like, and everyone just kind of went fucking hard. And I think that kind of, I think New York, we weren't like thinking about careers as much, and that made the theater a very special place. But then in my 30s, when I moved to LA and hung out UCB, UCB felt like a lot of people's second priority in a way that I think made the theater better too. Like New York had like theater camp energy, which was like so fun for a while, but a little too insular, and people were like, I'm never leaving. I'm doing these 4 shows forever. And so like that was another big difference for me. And I don't know if that was 05 versus 2012 or my 20s versus my 30s or New York versus LA. But that, when I came here, I was like, I just love how people are like, yeah, it's a UCB show. Like, not like in New York, it would be like, you would have like critiques of who got added to a Harold team that maybe you haven't even seen. You'd be like, they put that lady on that team. She is only good because she was on 2 good teams before, you know? And like now in LA, it's just like, when I came to LA, it was just like, and maybe it was just too many people, new people for me to like get caught up on goss and all that. But it was such a relief or refreshing for me to come to UCB LA and everyone be like, yeah, no, I love my improv team, but I am on a TV show. You know, like, all right, fair enough.
It felt like it was less like, we've found this sort of audience that's been looking for something like this, and we're building up this sort of like cult following, and a little bit more like, all right, we're kind of already plugged into the system here.
Right,
and like,
exactly.
People know to come here to scout for talent and stuff. And
it was almost like UCB LA wanted performers to come to them, and UCB New York had like performers first and needed an audience to come to them. And I was like, we're just going to be creeps in this fucking basement. Whoever's here is here. Lock the doors, you know, we're going.
The creep fact, I mean, we're also discussing this from, I'm sure if this was like, if there was one woman in this conversation, they'd be like, you guys haven't talked about any of the main things about getting involved.
Yeah, you're like,
UCB.
Hey, you guys, you two white straight males who showed up at the theater and kind of succeeded the whole time. And Mira's like, yes, we understand our perspective is not everyone's.
I remember like a couple different like times where there was sort of like a show and it maybe it was a bit show or like 3-on-3 tournament or something like that, or cage match. And like it being sort of like, oh, this was the first night a bunch of the theater like took notice of a pretty new girl. And oh, it God. Being literally like that scene in like Out of Sight where the guys each take turns trying to go talk to Jennifer Lopez at the bar. Like Birds would just be like that. You would just see like one at a time each guy come out. It was really funny, actually. Like just...
Dude, every fucking UCB party, you would just watch like Ellie Kemper have to like walk away. Like just like every... And God knows, based on historical evidence, I'm assuming some people were awful, but it did seem like a lot of it was just like, hello, you are in a, you know, like, hi, yes. Ellie. And she's like, hi, okay. Like, and of course people like leaning on how nice she is, but you're so right. It's like calling it like Out of Sight or that is like, it is also like blood in the water for sharks.
Yes.
Like,
yes, yeah, for like, exactly.
Prey and predators is one way to phrase it.
Yo, sure. Yeah.
But so, and I remember coming in, like, part of what bonded me and Pally really early on, A, we got put on our first Harold team together, but we also had come in with kind of serious girlfriends,
mm-hmm.
and we are both now still married to those girlfriends. So for us too, it was also like this, oh, we're not fully into this part of the scene. And then also our wives were like, we're not going to your fucking show, or like, we'll go to your show, but we're not hanging out at McManus after. We're like, yeah, no, that completely reasonable. Like,
yeah,
that makes total sense. I barely enjoy myself there until I'm on pint of Jameson and ginger ale in a pint glass was my drink for way too long. Oh, as wow. A 20 something in for, I was spending like $11 on a drink at McManus. Broke ass fucking living off coaching improv money. Like,
yeah, man, I remember that bar when I lived in Brooklyn and that bar opened. I just remember going in there at times and like asking how much different bottles of beer cost. Like, that's,
oh man,
I mean, and that's still how some people have to live. And I'm fortunate that it's not for me anymore, but man, that's like a
that distinct memory, dude. When I had to jump back to what you said earlier about moving in with those Iowa guys, thinking you're starting a collective. I moved in with two guys from my level two class, that aforementioned Paul Scheer class. Mm-hmm. I moved from my mom's house on Long Island into a Williamsburg apartment with those guys. And we were a three-person improv team called like Robot Ninja Bear or whatever. And we were like, we're going to move together. We're going to make videos. We immediately all started like hating each other. I got put on a Harold team. No one else did. They were like mad at me. Like all this shit. Like we immediately, and I was just like, oh, I was thinking we're going to be like this. But that was like the brokest I've ever been in my life.
Yeah.
And there was a place on Bedford Avenue that I walked past every night at a Mexican restaurant called Bonita. And Bonita would give you a little like to-go tray of rice and beans for $2. And I ate that four nights a week. Like I would just eat rice and beans. I would spend $2 on that, but then I would go out and spend like $40 getting hammered like a fucking idiot.
No, I would have like a can of black beans and then mix salsa in like so much like a meal. I was like, all right, that's good.
I would like bring a tall boy to UCB when I was performing, because like buying PBRs were like getting pricey for me. The PBRs when the theaters first started selling were $2 a can, and that was like, I was like, I can get a tall boy for $1.99. Let me grab a couple of those first. It's like, how do I need to get so? And I was like, what? I tied improv to drinking so hard for so long too, mm-hmm. where it was like, wow, man. When I moved to LA, I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do this fucking show with having to drive everywhere. It's like, oh, maybe I don't have to get blasted to do your effed up family. Neil, this was fun, man. Again, I just want to thank you for whatever this was 11 years ago, saying to Scott Aukerman, yeah, John Gabers is a new guy to LA who's good at improv and funny, because truly, I started doing Gino Lombardo like That was the first character I did there, the only character I did for 7 years. I did my own podcast. I launched a Patreon off my own. All met so many funny people outside of UCB via Comedy Bang Bang. And I will always credit you.
Well,
for that.
That's kind. Yeah. I mean, you're so hilarious. I'm in awe of your talent. And
Yeah, like, I didn't
listen to you watching your performance.
Fuck up your vouch. I didn't make you look bad.
I wasn't ever worried. Yeah.
Speaking of vouching, you have a show to plug that I watched the first few episodes of the first season. The show's so fun. So fucking
funny. Thanks,
man. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're on Paramount Plus now streaming. It was a very old school model of we aired once a week on Comedy Central and weren't streaming. And now, as of December 6th, we are streaming on all the episodes, unbleeped, all that on Paramount Plus. So that's...
Oh, that's awesome. So this episode will come out after December 6th. So it's out now on Paramount Plus. Check it out. Yeah. And you guys are working on a second season.
We're working on the second season. Yeah. Yeah. And Andy Samberg and I created it together, and it just sort of came out of talking that I was working on Brooklyn Nine-Nine and just wanted to make something super funny and goofy was the real impetus of it.
Yeah, how would you describe it? Like, I would say it's like an animated Indiana Jones.
Yeah, it's like a shithead, like dumbass Indiana Jones guy, voiced by Andy. And he's kind of, and it's set in a world where archaeologists are big celebrities and get like endorsements and you know, treat if they make a discovery, it's you know, like winning a game or something. They're treated like they're athletes or celebs or whatever, winning an award. So they're all sort of shitheads and full of themselves. And Andy's character Rip is kind of on the comeback trail and has his little group of weirdos he's out having
That's
adventures
awesome.
With.
Well, you hear that, shitheads? Tune in to Paramount Plus and watch it. I'm assuming like half of these mouth breathers have already watched it, these comedy nerds. If they're listening to High and Mighty, I think that means they've already watched an episode of Dig Man.
Yes, this is I'm targeting this audience. This is a calculated move coming onto your show.
Let's go, people. Let's get out there and check out Dig Man. Neil, and also if you live in LA, you gotta go see Playhouse Masterpieces. It's such a fun show. And what did I say it right, or is it Playmaster's House?
Exactly.
I was like,
no,
is it Playmaster's House piece? That can't be it. But then I was like, these goofy freaks might have fucked with the name.
I mean, we probably should change it to that. Yeah.
Oh, holy! Wait, hold on. I can see the poster now. Thank you for coming on, shitheads. You can check out my other podcast, Action Boys, at actionboys.biz, and 101 Places to Party Before You Die on Max. But if you only can afford one streaming service this month, hit up Paramount Plus. check out fucking Dig Man, for fuck's sake, you freaks. Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy, I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone. People are loving this movie.
It's actually, it's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now. Somewhere, somehow, someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to like see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane. It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Oh, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators.
We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action Boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it! Come on! Do it now!